This is Perry Marshall here. I have Victor Ching here on the phone. I've known Victor for probably 5 years or something. Victor's one of the sharpest marketing guys that I know. He comes from a highfalutin, like, is it Stanford?
Yeah, 2 degrees from Stanford.
MBA background. He's author of a book called Extreme Revenue Growth, The Guide for Silicon Valley CEOs. He's done a bunch of consulting with the high profile consulting firms, and now he's a independent entrepreneur. He's sort of went to the dark side. He's one of us now. And he's got a coaching group on the West Coast that one of my friends is a member of, speaks very highly. Victor's, I've done some coaching with Victor, and very sharp guy, and I became aware that Victor was very closely studying Barack Obama's email marketing, web marketing, social media campaigns. And so I wanted to interview him. So, Victor, welcome.
Thanks, Jerry.
And let's just get right into it. This whole election became much more interesting when Sarah Palin showed up. I'm sure these guys thought they had it all sewed up, and then out of, good grief, out of Alaska.
Out of left field.
And, of course, the best thing for fundraising is a good enemy.
That's right.
So tell everybody what happened the next day.
Sure. So the Republicans, you know, they had their convention, and Palin gave just a very compelling speech. Even the Democrats were like, oh, crap, that was good. And it's interesting. His campaign manager, I forget his name, sent out an email right at the end of the speech, realizing that this was going to be big news on the Republican side. And that one email, as all their emails do, asks for donations, and they did raise $10 million in the next 24 hours off of a single email.
Wow.
I think a list of 2 million people, and I think they got $100,000.
Wait, $10 million from 2 million people?
Mm-hmm.
That's $5 a head.
Average, yep.
Ooh.
And they,
that's pretty good.
I think a couple $100,000 donated, so their average sale, if you would, was, you know, just under about $100. So,
wow.
I was thinking from an internet marketing standpoint, you know, it sort of puts every you and me and everyone else we know in our field sort of to shame.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Well, this is mega, mega, mega big time, right?
Seriously, mega big time.
But it's the same stuff.
It is.
Right?
And we started exchanging emails back in January. You know, I had sort of put together some thoughts, and I started noticing what was going on, and I sent you an email, some other folks. And all that, the $10 million, you know, email is sort of is the culmination of a lot of other stuff that sort of led up to that. And so I was just very, very, very impressed with just how sophisticated, you know, the Obama camp really was, particularly online. And we can sort of get into the details, but just really, I mean, all the things we talk about, you know, we talked a lot about list segmentation, automated list segmentation, email marketing, adding content and value to emails. They do all of that sort of on steroids, and they're doing it on a national scale. So I was just impressed that a presidential campaign would be so savvy, and they clearly definitely were.
Well, it is very impressive. So why don't you start breaking it down? Talk about email list segmentation.
Sure.
Start there.
Sure. I would love to sort of emphasize one thing prior to that. It had to do with pay-per-click, actually.
Okay.
Since you're the pay-per-click guy, I thought I would mention it. I first found them on Google on a pay-per-click ad where I clicked on the ad and I went to a forced opt-in page. Okay, what this is like, you know, this is like the structure of your site.
Yeah.
And then that's when I started the whole email marketing, what do you do with it, started to sort of come to light. Which I'll talk about, but it was really starting with the basics. So I know you teach about, you know, small, short Google pay-per-click ad to a landing page, get the name, and then follow up.
Yeah.
And that's what he did.
Yeah. Good. Glad they were listening to me.
Yeah. Email list segmentation. Here's the big thing with list segmentation. You know, I think internet marketers sort of get a little sloppy when you can send an email for quote-unquote free. You tend to send a lot of emails to everybody, and I think that's sort of the wrong kind of thinking. If you think of, even though you're not paying sort of postage, as you would like you would in direct mail, you are costing the recipient attention. So if you send them stuff they don't like, then they tend to tune out because it's wasting their time. So there really is a cost to sending email. It's just not being borne by the marketer. It's being borne by the recipient.
Yep.
And so the general idea of list segmentation is you want to start splitting and slicing and dicing your list to better target what you say to them. And the part that I noticed with Obama and was that they were segmenting, well, I mean, they were tracking, and I don't know if they were actually using that, but they were tracking whether or not you were donating. And so if you were, I sort of got all their emails, was tracking it, made a small donation to see what they would do if anything would happen. And I noticed that when I get these emails, they're all HTML, I sort of look at the source code. And so I try to like see how they're, what's going on behind the scenes, which is.
Yeah, what are they tracking?
They encode. So when it says a link that says click here to donate, right? And it's a graphic. And so you look underneath it, they're embedding like personal ID codes. So they know, they have the ability to know whether or not, you know, as an individual, whether you clicked on that email personally and whether you donated or not. And if you did not donate, they would have send you a different message. And if you did donate, they would send you, you know, you sort of go into a different sort of sequence, if you would. And when I first sort of entered that whole system, they were doing some very interesting things with referral marketing using email. And what they would have, this sort of weird promotion, it was sort of odd, which is what kind of got me intrigued, is they did not ask you for an immediate donation when I first, back in January. They asked you to pledge money that would be donated only if they could find sort of a matching sponsor. And so the idea was, you know, I'll put up $25, but we won't take the money now. We'll only take the money if we can find somebody else who will also pay $25. And so you guys will do it together. And it sort of had this viral effect of, you know, now that you sort of committed to making the donation, but you actually haven't made it, go email all your friends. Get them to donate.
Yeah.
And your donation becomes active. And what they would do was very interesting, was when whoever matched your donation, you would get, and gave you permission to do so, you would get their email address and their name.
Mm.
So let's say I made the initial pledge of $25. You know, I email my friend Perry, and you respond to the email, and you donate $25. You and I would be able to exchange emails, and we can talk presumably about how great Obama is. And that was the month where he had his really big month, his first really big month online. I think it was like almost $40 million in a single month, which sort of blew away Clinton at the time, and arguably was probably the most amount of money raised in a primary, I believe.
Hmm.
So it was quite impressive. And so I was sort of noticing it sort of in mid-January, and I think I told our mutual friend Tom, and you, I think he's going to have a really monster month. I just think he's going to have a really monster month, and he did. That's when I came out. So that was the New York Times article that you had sort of sent me earlier.
Yeah. Wow. So you said you're even getting emails that are segmented by your state and your local, to this tiny granular level.
And
doesn't that get your attention a lot? When
it does. It does. And the interesting thing was they were doing things like, certainly with the California primary, it was don't forget to vote, you know, vote for Obama. But what was really interesting, just darn clever, this is in the primary season, when the primaries for the other states were going on, say, you know, Texas, you know, Pennsylvania, whatever, you might think normally you would, you know, just target the people in that state because they have the election coming up. But what Obama would do was he, you know, if there's a primary coming up, let's say in, I don't know, I'll pick a state, like Arizona, he would send out the email to the Arizona people saying, vote for me, don't forget to vote, then get your friends to show up at the polls. But to the other states, you know, the other, 49 states, I guess, he would say, join my cold calling team. And we want to get 100,000 people cold calling everyone in Arizona. You don't have to have any experience. Bring your cell phone to our cold calling party or do it from home. We'll send you the mailing list, which I believe they got from InfoUSA, incidentally. We want to make 1,000,000 phone calls to the people in Arizona in the next 48 hours.
Please, and the do not call lists don't apply to any of this.
That's
because
right.
It's political,
right.
Which is free speech.
That's right.
Oh, man.
So he was using that as recruiting. So he was doing telemarketing. And he didn't have a hired telemarketing sales force. He used the email list to recruit people. A lot of these are sort of younger folks.
Which is enthusiasts.
Absolutely.
So now he's got, like, passionate Democrats calling other people. Like, they're probably having 20-minute phone calls on their own cell phone bill.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. And so that's why you would see, you know, him come from behind a lot, why he was really using sort of this grassroots effort, and why, you know, I think the Clinton camp just could not see where this was coming from. I mean, first of all, there's this money coming out of just totally outraising Hillary. 2-1, 3-1, 4-1. And then from a cold calling standpoint, like, you know, 10, 100 times the size of the telemarketing sales force that Hillary had. And then he was just crushing it on sort of those two mediums. So it was very fun, very interesting to watch the whole thing happen.
So let's keep going down the list here. You want to talk about viral stuff and the social media stuff?
Yeah, so he's probably much more active now on social media than the McCain camp. You know, he's got his own, I think he's the most popular person on Facebook. I think he's now tied, though, with Michael Phelps. Michael Phelps sort of came from behind to win, you know, as he sort of was known to do in the Olympics. He's doing that, and it's just, it's another way to, you know, get people to interact with each other. So that's been pretty active. He's done an awful lot with video. You know, every speech is sort of on his website. Almost every email he sends includes a link to a video. Sometimes it's a video of him talking. Sometimes it's a video of his supporters. You know, they've done their own sort of YouTube videos about it. I think in the email that did sort of $10 million, that one was, you know, it was interesting. He's using an awful lot of emotion in these emails, too. It was, you know, Sarah Palin basically said, you guys are a bunch of idiots for thinking you can change, you know, change the way America works. Well, tell her you're wrong. Donate $5 here. Here's a video of people like you who sort of done the same thing, and it was sort of a video on people who are interested in hope and change and all that kind of stuff. So but there's a lot of use of video, certainly in the social media. Also, on the whole list invitation, when they would do local events, you know, like Obama's in town in San Francisco, where, kind of the area where I live, you know, he would encourage you to go. He encouraged you to bring your friends. And that's why he would have, from a public speaking standpoint, have these huge turnouts. So he's sort of crushing it on email, crushing it on telemarketing, and he's sort of selling from the platform, you know, with his huge audiences, too. And so it was all very sort of very integrated.
So who's orchestrating all this? I mean, Obama obviously.
I've been trying to find out because that would be a very important, useful person to know. But they so get it, and it's so integrated, so well executed, and so I thought that was sort of you know very, very interesting. So I was trying to find out. I wasn't able to figure out who did the internet stuff, but man, they know what they're doing. That's for sure. And the results, you know, sort of speak for themselves.
You know, it's worth mentioning that politics is a very, very profitable business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, anybody that thinks that, you know, Obama's just running for a $400,000 a year president job has no idea of the, you know, profit machinery that goes on behind the scenes. Like, for example, one of the businesses that exists in politics is, there's a name for this, I don't remember what the name is, let's call it dirt books on the other guy, where they'll hire a writer, copywriters, different people like that, and they'll write a book about how evil Hillary is, and they'll say, this very, very special insider's information book is sent only to people who donate $500 or more.
Interesting.
And they'll go out to in fundraising letters to, you know, hyper responsive Republicans, for example. And of course, it goes the other way too. And so what you have is the ability to sell a $500 book. And spend enormous amounts of money on marketing and everything else. But it falls under free speech. It's essentially, It's free of scrutiny. It doesn't have to conform to fair advertising laws. Like most people don't know that you can blatantly lie in a political campaign commercial and nobody gets to stop it because it's free speech.
Yep.
So they can make any promise they want. They can slime the opponent of any, in the most slanderous ways, whether it's true or not. And like the TV stations can't even refuse to run it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, this is, like, if people had any idea what kind of business this really is, and there's, truth be told, there's a lot of copywriters that make their living in this little corner of the world. I bet Obama must have hundreds of, at least dozens of copywriters that are, you know, have more work than they could possibly know what to do with, crafting all these emails and everything. I mean, this is big, big, big business.
It is, and it's definitely, I think on the Obama emails, it's very personality driven. You get emails from, you know, you get emails from Biden, from him, from his wife, from his campaign manager, and they all have different voices in it. And it, you definitely hear their voices come through. And I always think sort of politics is, you know, it's sort of the most interesting, you know, information product, if you would.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's an info business.
It is. You give me money and you'll get nothing back.
Right.
And what it really is, and this is a lesson actually for all of us, it's really a business of selling feelings and emotions.
Right.
You know, and I think that's one of the things I think Obama did very well is he sort of, you know, he made the argument that hope and change was more important than experience, and to a certain portion of the population that, you know, that really resonates because they're sort of tired of the old stuff.
Right.
And if you watch his emails, it's every one really sort of triggers an emotion. You know, the Palin, the post Palin speech email was, you know, she just called you an idiot. You know, she called you guys an idiot. Are you going to take that? Donate $5 here. You know, and ones before that were, you know, McCain just wants to be the same old, you know, it's like Bush term three. Tell them you're fed up. Donate here, $5, you know. I think they do a lot of testing as well. I mean, they used to ask for $25 donations, and they've more recently shifted to $5 donations. And I given everything else they've done, I'm going to think, going to attribute that to some split testing. I don't know for sure. And my suspicion is that their average donation size hasn't dropped down. But my guess is it drives up the click-through rate, and that the average donation stays the same regardless of what is asked, you know, in the email is my suspicion. So if they drop down to donate $5, which is an even lower barrier, you know, sort of like almost like a lead gen offer almost, and then by the time you get there, they sort of like, you know, upsell you to sort of donating more. So, yeah, every email is just very emotionally charged, and it's hitting all the psychological triggers, you know, love, hate, hope. You know, passion,
mm-hmm.
you know, revenge, you know, vengeance, all the stuff. It's all being sort of triggered.
You know, Victor, I am, you know, I'm a seasoned marketer. I'm also a person who, by nature, is very cynical about politics.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we were talking before the recording started about, you know, I hardly even pay attention to this stuff. But, you know, I kind of have to set my cynicism aside for a little bit and really study what's going on. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, who knows to what extent Obama or anybody else drinks their own pink Kool-Aid? Do they really believe this? I don't know. But I know that, you know, I believe in the things that I sell. I had to use an at least equal amount of enthusiasm to go do my job in the world as, you know, as a bunch of politicos are doing for theirs. I mean, people are drawn to passion and enthusiasm and hope and emotion and all that kind of stuff. You know, why would people pay attention to all this stuff? Because it's the most interesting thing they can find to pay attention to. That's why, right?
Absolutely.
Victor, what comments do you have about the announced Joe Biden via text message thing? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that was interesting. So just to sort of make sure everyone's on board or up to speed, I had received an email from the Obama camp that this is part of the whole, you know, broadcast email, that he was on the verge of announcing, you know, his VP selection. And to hear before everybody else, like including the media, send us your, give us your cell phone number and we'll text you, you know, who the pick is.
Yep.
And that was a, and that was a bit of an experiment from what, because they sort of, a little bit of a post-mortem analysis came out as to why they were doing that. They wanted to be able to have the option to text people as another communication channel. So email's not enough. And I don't know if this is, you know, on election day, you get a text from Obama in the morning saying, don't forget to vote, right?
Oh, I bet.
I bet. So they did that. I don't know how successful it was. But they were, you know, these guys are just, they just want, like, want to dominate one media at a time, right? So it wasn't good enough that he could sort of do speeches in front of 80,000 people. It wasn't good enough that you have, like, 100,000 people cold calling for free. It wasn't good enough to have email. They wanted to be able to dominate texting, too.
Mm-hmm.
This was their chance that they had sort of an opportunity to why you'd want to give up your cell phone number so you get this information in a more timely fashion than you could by email. So it was a good excuse, as I understand it, because they had so many they had to send out. They started sending it out at like 3 in the morning.
Wow.
On that day. Maybe that was sort of, you know, West Coast time, so maybe 6 o'clock on East Coast. But they were starting to do that. And that's how I think the press found out about it, is they got the texts first before the actual press release went out. So it was, and that was interesting, and that's, I would put in the experimental category, and we'll see if it makes a difference. But it's just interesting that even in something that's as important as this, they're testing and trying new things, and not sort of sitting on their laurels.
It's an edge where the competition isn't doing enough.
Absolutely.
You know? I mean, is it useful to have 10 million people's cell phone numbers? Holy cow, of course it is.
Wouldn't hurt.
You know?
Wouldn't hurt.
So, yeah, and you got, I mean, there's stuff on Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, you know, Dig. I mean, every kind of social media thing that there is, there's just gobs and gobs of Obama stuff. It's unbelievable, right?
And also, it's a fit with the message, right? It's the message in his platform is, you know, let's unite the people and sort of grassroots. It's inherently a social message, right?
Right.
So going after social media sort of is an obvious fit. Adding viral elements to email marketing is a natural fit. Getting people to cold call on your behalf, you know, also a natural fit. So I think there was just a good integration between sort of, you know, his belief and philosophy, and all the various, you know, pieces of marketing that have been done. That's all sort of cohesive, I guess. And it's all very integrated too.
I have had conversations with people, saying that because Obama is doing this, he's much less beholden to the traditional sources of funding, like the big institutions and the big companies and the, you know, the teachers unions and all that kind of stuff. You know, some people have speculated that because this is so grassroots, that his constituency really is the general public and not the special interests.
Well, I think there is some validity to that, at least in terms of the math. Certainly his message. But I think there is some validity to that. Back in January, you know, I had read an article about the Hillary camp, and, you know, she had gone to the traditional, Democratic, you know, high net worth donors. And,
yep.
And I guess there's a limit of, what, $2,300 or $2,600 you can donate per person per election. So the primary is just one election, and then there's the main election, the general election. And sort of the word was that she had maxed out her traditional base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's like a set, I don't know, maybe 100,000 people who just always donate every election, and, you know, whatever the number is. And then come January, she had maxed out everybody that was sort of in that traditional camp. And at the same time, Obama was hitting like his millionth or 2 millionth donor, something crazy like that. Well, actually, it was like close to 1 million donors. And they had on average given like $50. So they had another, you know, 2,000 change to go per person. And then that number resets at the general election, which I guess sort of officially flipped over in a couple days ago. And so those 2 million people can donate now a maximum of another 2,500.
Mm.
So That's like a lot of money.
Well, it is. And you know, I have to say, in a grand historical perspective, every technological advance since 1000 AD has made people more equal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the invention of the gun, the invention of the horseshoe, the invention of the post office, the discovery of electricity. I mean, you could go down the list and every and all the different forms of communication, and all of those things give little people more of a voice, powerful people. It compresses the difference between the top and the bottom. I mean, that's why forms of democratic government are so prevalent in the world. I don't have any doubt that this really does, just as it changes the election in the way that it's promoted, it also changes the way democracy functions. I don't have any doubt about that. I think there has to be some kind of truth to this idea of what I just said. And I also have to think that it's got to be a double-edged sword where if candidates do not satisfy the people that really got them into office, mm-hmm. like for some presidents, you know, maybe the National Education Association really did get him into office. Maybe the Teamsters really did get him into office, right? Well, hey, you know, maybe it's, you know, if a whole bunch of Generation Y people got somebody into office, then if they're unhappy with something that's going on, they're going to have a chance to say something. We can hope. I mean, I'm really curious to see how this is going to develop, but this is not your father's
election.
Presidential election at all.
I think it's interesting that, you know, if anything, no matter who wins, it's going to be historic.
Yeah.
Which I thought was fabulous, you know, because I have girls, you know, and I would love to have female role models, you know, in various positions of power.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, I don't think Palin would have been chosen, you know, no knock against her, unless Obama was running and doing so well.
Mm.
If he was not doing so well, I think McCain would have taken a more conservative path. You know, he knew, I mean, if you look at sort of some of the political pundits and their analysis, you know, the inside word within the camp was they were in trouble.
Well, I think it was obvious to everybody.
Yeah, well, and to his credit, McCain, he was aware of it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he was in trouble, and it took guts for him to sort of do something radically different, take a serious risk. And I was watching the news very carefully online. It's, you know, for the first 72 hours after his announcement, it was like, you know, McCain could not be a bigger idiot. You know, and then Palin did her speech, and I'm like, man, is he a genius, you know. And so they go from literally zero to hero, you know. I mean, the drama, I mean, it's just incredible. The drama is insane on this one. So I think, if anything, he's Obama's effort making a grassroots, it's forcing, you know, a lot of non-traditional things to happen. But my book, that's great news.
Well, back to your $5 donations thing,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot of money out in those $5 donations. I am sure that for every one $50 donation, there's five $5 donations sitting out there from somebody that ain't got a lot of money to spare, but they got something. And, you know, that's probably another 10 or 20% more funds for a campaign, and that's a really big deal. And once again, you know, if they can send those via PayPal or whatever, and it's really super easy, once again, this is not your daddy's presidential campaign, you know, where, you know, in direct mail, you wouldn't bother mailing to somebody unless they could send you back at least $100.
Right.
Right?
You had to market to the rich.
Right.
You had no choice. The economics don't work.
Yeah, and so, yeah, it's really really quite remarkable. Are there any other little things that we missed here that people would be interested in hearing about?
There are a couple. If I can talk a little bit about sort of positioning, that's I think an interesting one. That sort of goes back a while. And also sort of to give you just a little update on myself, Perry. You don't know this because we haven't sort of talked by phone in a while. We sort of normally sort of email. I've done a lot with book publishing more recently, and but actually interviewed on television and on radio about the presidential elections from a book marketing standpoint. So I'm the author of this book called Bookmercial Marketing. Sort of think of it as an infomercial, but in a written form.
Mm.
And I always use Obama as an example of using books to market like a big idea, right? And he got out sort of very early on with his Audacity of Hope, you know, sort of being the hope guy.
Yeah.
So and then that segued into sort of being the change guy. So the hope message got out, if I'm not mistaken, before the actual election started.
Mm.
So he was sort of pre-selling, if you would, you know?
Yeah.
And he got sort of linked to hope, and then once he sort of officially kicked off the election, he went from sort of hope to change. And so he sort of became really tied to that. So even the Republicans know he's the change guy, right? And so I think Hillary, for example, winding back, we'll talk about McCain, you know, I think she picked the wrong thing to be sort of tied to. You know, she wanted to be known for experience, and she sort of misjudged what people were looking for by a lot.
Right.
And
experience comes with a lot of baggage, man.
Absolutely, particularly if you're not happy with what's going on. and enough people aren't happy. And so he became sort of the hope and the change guy. And now what's interesting is, you know, McCain is trying to, is realizing, okay, change is clearly the message people want to hear. And he's trying to sort of, you know, co-opt that. But McCain's book is called, like, you know, Hard Decisions. You know, it's a book called, I'm sorry, it's called The Hard Call. And it was a book maybe out a couple of years ago about, you know, the great leaders in history and how they've had to make difficult but oftentimes unpopular decisions. And so he wanted to be known as the guy who can make the hard call, right? And he's been very consistent with that. And what's interesting now is that he's sort of saying, you know, hey, if you want change, you know, vote McCain. And sort of, you know, it's a bit of a change, right, in terms of his message. And right now the Obama camp is trying to, like, you know, eviscerate that argument by sort of pointing out certain different things. But I think, you know, picking your point of positioning is really, really very vital. And believing in something, you know, and that's where the whole enthusiasm and passion comes from. And a book is certainly one way to sort of, you know, be known for that. You know, blogging and lots of other things are other ways. But I think he did an interesting job of picking that position. My sense was that it was probably, you know, not meant to be manipulative, but more genuine than what he thought and believed. But nonetheless, it turned out to be the right pick or an effective pick, and he's done a good job of being very consistent with that. And so so that's built up sort of a momentum of its own. You know, his book is on the New York Times, both his books are on the New York Times bestseller list this week. And the reason I was sort of called on to various radio interviews is because now the McCain camp, where the Republicans have come back and fought back with their own set of books. So there are now three books on the New York Times bestseller list telling people why Obama's not the right guy.
Hmm.
And so now they sort of wised up. There's the case against Barack Obama, which is a book very critical of Barack Obama. There's the Obama Nation, which is last week was number one, now it's number two on the New York Times bestseller list.
Hmm.
From the same guy who wrote the book that sort of brought down Kerry, the Swift Boat thing.
Okay.
And so that's sort of a whole nother battlefield, if you would, you know, that I think Obama was leading early on in terms of using books, and now I think the Republicans clearly have the advantage in, you know, really fighting back very, very hard and very aggressively in that arena as well.
You know, one thing that I'm privy to that most other people wouldn't is I'm in Oak Park, Illinois, which is where Obama came from.
Okay.
And so I've actually had a chance to see his career unfold for the last 5 years. I remember literally 5 years ago when this grassroots thing in Oak Park started to, hey, we got this new guy, and he's a new kind of guy, and he's got this different outlook on everything, and, you know, he's from Kenya, and he's black, and, I mean, people, it was essentially the same message way back then.
Interesting.
And the same personality. And the same kind of, you know, the outsider comes to this new game. You know, part of this is engineering, a sales message to be what people want to hear, But I think part of it comes from simply who people are. I think people like Obama because of who he is.
Absolutely.
I think people, you know, Hillary could decide to emphasize experience or whatever else, but, you know, people instinctively look at that and they go, Hillary equals old school. Let's see. We got the Clinton family in the White House and then the Bush family in the White House for what? The last 20 years?
Yeah.
Do we want like 4, 8 years more? Whatever, you know? Is that what we really want? And, you know, I always said, I don't think Hillary has a snowball's chance to ever make this thing. But she's a great fundraiser for the Republicans.
Oh, they hate her.
That's been my take for a long time. And another thing I wrote about in my newsletter a while back was, again, I don't pay a lot of attention to this. I was sitting in the Atlanta airport, and I'm watching the TV screens, which I can't even hear.
Yeah.
And so I'm seeing Hillary and Obama and McCain, and I'm just looking at that, and I can't even hear what they're saying, and I'm going, Hillary does not look like a president. McCain looks like a vice president. Obama actually looks like a president. I think Obama's going to win this thing. Now, you put Palin in. Wow, that's like a whole different. That's a whole different visual image. Who knows how this is all going to turn out, but I definitely believe that McCain's entire image completely changed as soon as he introduced her.
Well, they're calling the ticket now Palin McCain. And, you know, there's probably some truth to that.
Yeah.
And actually, she's popular for a lot of the same principles and reasons why Obama's popular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people can relate to Obama as someone who's, like, kind of sick and tired of how the politicians.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of positions himself as the outsider. And if you look sort of at the online comments, if you would, of why people like Palin, you know, it's the, wow, that could have been me. I think it's for a lot of women, you know, who are, if not hockey moms, soccer moms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that just sounds like just like my life.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if she's that experienced, but, wow, she's got to understand my situation better than McCain or
right.
Obama or, you know, people who are making a lot of money, you know. And her husband is, you know, I think very blue-collar, you know, works on fishing boats, is a member of a steelworkers union. And so there's this whole, you know, Cialdini talks about the whole likability is one of the big ways to influence others. And the big thing with liking is being similar. So I think a lot of people identify with her more so than some other candidates on either ticket. And that's why I think she's popular. And then she's speaking to certain values that a lot of the Republicans really sort of like. So I think that's why that same sort of same formula, if you would, but sort of in a different, expressed to a different person, is sort of giving the Keynes candidacy a lot more life.
Yeah. Well, very good. Is there any more you like to tell people about your books and where to find you on the internet and all that, Victor?
Sure. So I guess the stuff that I'm sort of taking a page out of the Obama camp of being known for one thing, and you've actually known me sort of through various incarnations of my career, I'm really focusing on this book publishing company that I started called Book Marshall Productions, and that's at www.bookmercial.com, bookmercial.com.
Mm-hmm.
And people can get my book. It's called Book Marshall Marketing. Why Books Replace Brochures in the Credibility Age. It's available at all the online bookstores, as well as bookmercial.com. And those are probably the easiest ways to get a hold of me. That's it.
Well, that's great, Victor. I really appreciate this analysis of what's going on. And, hey, you know, I don't have any doubt that these guys learned how to put these campaigns together from grassroots people like me and you. I mean, this is we're the guys that figured all this stuff out. So it's not small time anymore. It's big time.
Oh, they're real big dollars, and I'm having a lot of fun just watching. I mean, this is gonna be like a bloodbath. It's like two gladiators going at it, and it's a close one too. So it's
yes. I love the, you know, triple overtime basketball games.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's, you know, the blood pressure's up. You can look on the web every day and you find see what's going on. It's just very fascinating to watch. Very, very enjoyable, too.
Well, thank you, Victor. Appreciate it. And, yeah, everybody, check out Victor's work at bookmercial.com. And, yeah, thank you.
You're quite welcome, Perry.